Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
I've talked about this issue in previous podcasts, but only briefly, only very much on the surface level, and I want to delve into it a little more deeply today. And here's the fundamental premise. When you're out in the world photographing, let's say in the landscape, and you see a tree that captures your eye and you stop to photograph it, why did you photograph that tree in particular when there were probably hundreds, if not thousands, of trees that you encountered, that you drove past, that you walked through in the woods, and you didn't photograph them? Why select the one tree to photograph and not all the others? What makes that one tree more photogenic than all the others? I've thought about this a great deal lately. For some reason, I'm fascinated by this whole discussion about why we choose to photograph what we choose to photograph. And as much as I've thought about it, I'm not sure I have the answer. I do, however, think I have one answer. And that answer is idealism. So much of photography, as it's practiced today anyway, is the pursuit of the ideal rather than the pursuit of what we find. We select specific things because somehow they're closer to the ideal of that thing, that idea, that concept, than all the other trees or things that are similar to it, but they're just not quite as ideal. This manifests itself in each one of us when we go out photographing and we come back and we start sorting through our Lightroom catalog. What are we looking for? We're looking for the best shot. We're looking for the one capture that can be processed so that it exceeds the potential of all the others. Or perhaps said in simpler terms, we're looking for the ideal shot. And all the ones that aren't the ideal shot have some sort of flaw in them, or some sort of compositional element that we're not comfortable with, or the light wasn't quite right, or maybe there was a technical flaw, but that's less and less frequent these days. Somehow, the best shot is closer to the ideal than everything else. What does that mean? What is the ideal? When I try to quantify what the ideal is, somehow I can't stop thinking about statistics. That is to say, it's a group decision that as a society, we decide what ideal is, what beauty is, what spectacular nature is. So if one person says the ideal is the sagebrush in the desert, the rest of society says, oh no, it's Yosemite in all of its magnificent glory as a national park or Yellowstone or somewhere. So the ideal ends up taking on a collective definition, which in turn pushes us photographers not to photograph what we see or what we respond to, but if we're in search of the ideal, we will tend to migrate towards the ideal as defined by the collective definition of ideal, by society's definition of ideal. And I suppose, in some regards, there's nothing wrong with this approach in photography. If it's what you want to do, then go ahead. But it seems to me that if we move closer and closer to the collective vision of ideal, we don't necessarily move closer and closer to our own personal expression, to whatever it is that we feel, because we're all unique people. We're all going to feel things a little differently. We're all going to see the world a little differently. But if we pursue, quote-unquote, the ideal, aren't we essentially pursuing something that's not our vision of the world, but that we perhaps think is, statistically anyway, everybody else's vision of the world? And that's not personally expressive photography. That's not, the way I think of it anyway, is the art life. So what are we to do? Well, if we don't want to photograph the herd's mentality of what ideal is, then it's real easy to flip to the opposite, which a lot of photographers have done. If it's not ideal, then what is it? It's the opposite, which is banal, or the ugly, or somehow the unnatural. I think of photographers like the New Topographics folks. Louis Baltz photographing housing tracts in Denver, I think it was. Or was it Irving Penn, I think, that did all the cigarette butts? Or I'm sure you can think of other examples. But as has often been said, whether you're bound by chains of gold or bound by chains of iron, either way, you're still bound. So if you're bound by the ideal, you're bound, and you're limiting your creative expression to the herd mentality. And if you're bound to the banal, the ugly, and the unnatural, you're also bound to just what is the opposite of the herd mentality. So instead of taking pretty pictures at sunset, you're taking pictures of garbage dumps. Either way, it's a reaction to what's expected, rather than life as you probably live it. Another way I like to think of this, if you're not comfortable with the idea of the ideal, then it's life as we dream it. It's sort of utopian. We would all love to live in Yosemite, amongst that pristine nature and those beautiful clouds. So many, many of us go to Yosemite because we want to experience that pristine nature. But we don't always find pristine nature there, because oftentimes what we find is lots and lots of crowds and noise and smog and no place to park and restrictions on where we can go and what we can see. It's really not the ideal when we try to live it. So we dream of an ideal life, again, rather than photographing it as life is experienced. If we were to photograph something in Yosemite that was true, we'd probably photograph the roads and the traffic and the crowds and the people and the tourist trinket stands and etc. But I've seen, tens of thousands of pictures of Yosemite, and I've never seen that aspect of Yosemite photographed at all, because it's not life as dreamed. It is only life as experienced. And that doesn't seem very photogenic. All of this combines to create a certain purposeful blinding to what is, which seems to me to be the exact opposite of what we try to accomplish as photographers. There's a famous saying in Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching where he says, the five notes blind the ear, the five colors blind the eye. What he means by that is the minute someone defines these are the five notes, well, here in the West we have a different scale, we have eight notes in an octave, but the pentatonic scale in Lao Tzu's China had five notes, and his contention was the minute a musician plays only those five notes, he or she is ignoring the vast majority of sounds that come in between the notes. I think of Eric Clapton pushing and pulling that string to find notes in between the tuned notes. But the minute society says, these are the five notes that are notes, these are the defined colors of the rainbow, there's lots and lots of other colors, lots and lots of other notes that we don't see. Well, there's a parallel here. If society defines the way a certain thing is supposed to look, a certain tree, a certain landscape, a certain person, a certain definition of beauty, etc., the minute society defines that and then we modify our photography to fit those standards, what we are doing is purposely binding ourselves, because the world is not limited to five notes or eight notes or a defined number of colors. Let me approach this from a slightly different perspective. A lot of photography is aimed at the peak moment of action. This is particularly easy to think of in sports photography and things like that, or even just family snapshots blowing out the birthday cake. There's one moment that is the peak moment of action, and that's the one we want to get. Why? Why does that peak moment define somehow the best moment. And that's become such a thing in photography that all the other moments get discarded as not being the peak moment. So therefore, we won't process those. We'll delete those off our hard drives. We won't show those in our gallery exhibition or in our book. There's only the one, the best shot. But is that all there is? Seems to me that life is much more contiguous than that. That every peak moment has on either side of it an infinite number of moments that could also be interesting, that obviously are often captured, but too frequently discarded, because they don't fit that collective definition of the ideal. There is a collective definition of the ideal in photography. And so much of what we spend our time doing as photographers is to rise to that level of excellence. So we pursue the right equipment, we pursue the right techniques, we pursue the right moment to make the photograph, the right location, where to stand, where to put the tripod, all in pursuit of that ideal, or at least the collective definition of ideal. And that's what determines what we produce, rather than life as we live it. The collective pressure to produce what is expected, probably nowhere more visible than in the ubiquitous thumbs up, thumbs down, which can mean I like, I dislike, but probably more subtly means I approve, I don't approve, this fits the standard, this one doesn't fit the standard, this one approaches the ideal, the other one does not. All of this pressure combines, I think, to morph and almost destroy, put an end to the life of an artist as someone who expresses personal opinion, who experiences the world and wants to share it. For the longest time, I think, in photography, particularly through the last century, there was sort of a priesthood of photographers. And these were people who had the technical skill, and they had the right kind of equipment, and they traveled, and they were the people who were the photographers. The rest of us were just snap shooters. We weren't part of the priesthood. We didn't have connections. We didn't have abilities. We didn't have insight. What we had, if anything, was luck. And so occasionally we could glimpse what it was like to be an artist when we got lucky. But what does that mean? To get lucky in photography means that you were at the right place at the right time with the right equipment and the right exposure and the right processing and etc. to get something that was very, very close to the collective definition of the ideal. Hence you get people saying, well, you can't make a decent photograph at noon, for example, because it's not the right light. You have to be out in the early morning or the late setting sunlight to get that magic hour light. Or does that simply tell us how to get the predictable collective definition of ideal? As I've been thinking about this issue, relative primarily, I have to confess, to my own work, what I find is that definition of ideal is less and less satisfactory because it's less and less mine. It's less and less a personal expression. It's more about me chasing what other people's expectations are and finding somehow my joys in their approval. But as I've gotten older, that feels more and more shallow as an approach to photography. That maybe an artist is one who sees glory in the mundane. And by glory, I'm using it in a special term, not a religious term or any of that. But according to the dictionary, one of the definitions of glory is a highly praiseworthy asset. Well, what is the asset that we artists are pursuing? We're pursuing a response, an experience that leads to a response, to a way to communicate our response so the rest of the world can share that with us. And in some regards, there's no sharing when what we photograph is the collective definition of ideal. Everyone can see glory in the glorified. Everyone who goes to Yosemite is going to see Yosemite as a beautiful, fantastic place, because it is. You don't need an artist to tell you that. There are, of course, aspects of Yosemite that is not part of the collective definition of the ideal, and some good photography can be done there as photographers express themselves in what they see. But in essence, what they're in pursuit of is that highly praiseworthy asset of the personal experience, the personal connection. Guy Tall spends a lot of time talking about the personal connection we make to the moment. And the more I think about this, the more I'm convinced that that's what the life of being a fine art photographer is all about. It's not necessarily even about the product we produce. It's certainly not about the applause that we get when we present an audience with something they already know is ideal. That the real life of the artist is exploring the not ideal, to working to connect to those moments of insight, of understanding, of revelation, of wonder, of glory. A highly praiseworthy asset, an aspect of life that is ideal. When we are wandering around in the world and we see something that would normally be kind of mundane or not ideal, but yet we see it as though it's a highly praiseworthy thing to see, then we're approaching the life of the artist. Then the challenge is, how do we photograph this not spectacular thing in a way that preserves that connection? Not life as dreamed, but rather life as discovered, life as lived. I struggle with this to some degree because the pull of photographing the ideal is so strong. This becomes more visible to me when I consider my reaction to certain books. There are some photography books that are filled with photographs of idealized locations, and I look at those photographs and I think, they're not showing me anything. I already know this is a beautiful place. I already know this is spectacular. I already know these places, maybe even because I've been there. So what am I gaining by spending time with that book? There's obviously congratulations due to the photographer for making beautiful photographs, but then again, I kind of feel badly for the photographer that that's what the limit of their definitions of photography are, is making pictures that look so good that everybody says, yeah, we all agree, that looks good. The photographer hasn't shown me anything. They haven't introduced me to anything. They haven't even shown me themselves, other than saying, I'm a part of the herd. I'm a part of the group that establishes the collective definition of ideal, and we reinforce that through our photography. Of course, each one of us who are photographers have to define what it is to us, what it means to us to be a photographer. But for those of us who are attracted to words like personally expressive photography, it's the personally part that needs special attention. Because if we're not photographing life as lived, if we restrict ourselves to making more images of the collective definition of ideal, when it's all said and done, I fear we haven't really accomplished a lot. We've certainly had fun. Nothing wrong with that. And maybe that's as lofty a goal as we have for photography, is just to use it as a means to enjoy the world. I think that's a great use of photography. But it's not exactly the same as being an artist, who I've come to think of more and more as one who sees glory in the mundane. And the more I think about that, and particularly when I think about it relative to other expressive art media, the more I realize there's some sort of general principle here. Because I could say that the artist is one who sees glory in the mundane in almost any art medium I can think of. We all use words, but poets find the glory in simple everyday words by creating combinations and visual images that the rest of us don't when we use everyday words. The same thing could be said of novelists, dancers, musicians, sculptors. They all find glory, that is, something highly praiseworthy, in ways that other people might just walk by. Michelangelo saw David in the stone. Rembrandt found beauty in the shadows. Weston found exquisite life on a little rocky outcrop at Point Lobos. What happens to us as artists if we think deeply about what we choose to photograph and whether or not we are making those selections based on a collective definition of ideal, or are we making photographs based on our own internal recognition of glory in the moment of life? As I said at the beginning, I'm not sure I really have the answer to the question about why we choose to photograph what we choose to photograph. But I think this pursuit of idealism is one answer, and one that's definitely worth thinking about more deeply, because doing so may give us reasons to look elsewhere than what we've been taught and trained to see as the photographable, based on that collective definition of the ideal.
Copyright 2024, Lenswork Publishing.